Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Dave Dufour is in the building. So happy to have Dave back on the show.
Also presented by The Athletic, by the way, technically.
Also presented by The Athletic. Dave's everywhere on The Athletic. I mean, that guy is just unbelievable. How many podcasts do you do for this company?
God, it feels
like a million.
You know what? As many as I can. Just never stop talking.
Gotta show that value. I love it.
It's amazing. What's up?
We're gonna do NBA awards here. We're gonna do preseason awards, and we're gonna do like a little bit of a different spin on it, right? So we're gonna do your traditional MVP, defensive player of the year, all that stuff. And then on top of it, we're going to add a few categories that I find interesting and might spice up the idea of a traditional awards podcast. Most underrated offseason move that could swing the title race. Most interesting preseason trade target. Things like that. And we're just going to have a fun time. We're going to chat about just random things that happen across the NBA this preseason. Dave, how much preseason basketball have you watched thus far?
Not a ton. Yeah. I'll be honest about it. I try to catch, like, all right, first quarter here, first quarter there. I'm doing a lot of reading right now of the guys that and gals that cover these teams, because it's more important to get the reporting for me right now, because then I can have an idea of, all right, well, this is what I think the roster is going to look like, the rotation is going to look like as we get into the regular season. The preseason stuff for me winds up being largely a waste. I mean, some of these guys, like the two-way guys who are out there competing for a spot, that I can get some value from. But, you know, outside of maybe seeing some stuff from new coaches, like, you know, like saw that the Mavs did a bunch more post-ups. You know what I mean? Ja Morant hunting some more off the dribble threes. Very few things that I actually find extremely useful about the preseason. So, no, I'm not watching a ton right now.
Yeah. How concerned are you about that Mavericks situation? Because I am. I mean, I'm very concerned.
We'll see. Like, look, I don't think that – obviously, this is a downgrade at coach. I don't think anyone is going to argue that. I mean, I think if, you know, everyone being honest – about it, even the people involved in the situation would say that it is a downgrade. Like, Rick Carlisle is a great coach, but you never know, man. Sometimes a different voice can change things, and all of the reports that we've heard out of, you know, the Lakers camp is that everything went great there. So I guess we'll see what it's like when, you know, there's a little bit of power involved, which has traditionally been one of the problems, that and not being able to coach very well, right? Like, that's the biggest problem, is not being a good basketball coach. But guys get better. I mean, you know, any coach has an opportunity to improve, and he got to go and coach under Frank Vogel, who is everyone respects as a real good coach. I mean, he won a title, so there's you know, he's in rarefied air there. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I'm cautiously, you know, just kind of ambivalent right now. I want to see it first, but if they're aggressive defensively like he was trying to do in Milwaukee, that team is going to be a disaster. So I hope we don't see that.
And just like the general post-up stuff that you mentioned as
there's
well.
A lot of them.
Like, we know that
everybody
we know that
up.
Porzingis can't do that.
Well,
like, we've seen evidence of it. We know.
I do think that, like, the traditional get his back to the basket, I do think that there are some opportunities that get missed for Porzingis on the block, not necessarily post-ups. I don't think they get him moving into that space a lot, you know, as often as they ought to. And even, you know, when they create those mismatches, they're often so late in recognizing that he's got a mouse in the house that he can just turn and shoot over. I think that's the other problem, right? When he catches the ball, I really just want him to turn and be 7 feet tall when he's got a guy who's 6'5 on him, instead of you know, being a buck 90 or whatever he weighs, right? Like, that's the difference in what he does as a post-up player, is I want quick and decisive jump shooter face-up, and he still tries to back guys down. He's just too weak for that. His hips are too high, and especially if you get a stout guy who's, you know, 6'3", 6'4", you just can't do anything with that. So I will say, though, I want to see more Luka post-ups. I think that that's a good thing for them. I mean, he can – with his court vision and his size, especially when he gets a mismatch – that is a positive to me. But Yeah, I'm with you. I don't want to see any Dorian Finney-Smith post-ups.
Oh, God. That's right. As much as I love Dorian Finney-Smith, like, yeah, that just seems like a bad...
But let's not do that.
Bad plan.
Yeah.
So the problem with the Porzingis, like, mid-range, because a lot of it ends up being these mid-range jumpers, 100%. Right? Because he's just not physical enough to, like, bury someone for the reasons that you just said, right? High hips, does not have that great lower body strength. Over the last 2 years, Kristaps Porzingis has shot 38.3% and 40.5% from 10 to 16 feet, and has shot 40.5% and 42.5% from 16 feet to the three-point line, so the farther mid-range areas. It's just hard to win based off the math whenever you're shooting 40%. From mm-hmm. those ranges. Like, I don't know. I like the way that Rick Carlisle was doing it. I think that you space guys out. I think that you kind of let Luka do things that way. And I think you try and find the third guy to play with them. Because I think there's value in Kristaps. Yeah. I think that there's definitely value in a lot of the guys they have on that roster. But they're still a guy away.
They need a guy who can come and stir the drink. You know? Like, yeah. They've got Luka and that's it.
Yeah, they need a second ball handler, I thought. That's why I was a little bit surprised they didn't really seem to chase Spencer Dinwiddie this summer. I thought that would be an interesting one. But
is that a Goran thing, though? Is that just assuming that they're going to be in on Goran on a buyout or maybe a trade of some sort?
Oh, we're going to get to Goran in one of these sections.
I mean, that feels like a gamble.
I've got set here.
Okay, all right. Well, let's jump into the show. Don't let me derail us with Mavericks.
No, it's good. I haven't talked enough about the Mavericks and their coaching change yet.
Yeah.
I think there is a real chance that that is like a nightmare situation.
Listen, it could be a disaster, but it could be totally fine because you've got Luka Doncic, right? Like, if it's a bad team, then certainly I'm leaning towards saying, all right, this is going to be awful. But you still have Luka. So, you know, coaching is – I think it's often overlooked. And then I also think the impact is often overrated. Having great players mm-hmm. is the single most important contributing factor to winning in the NBA. Great players win games. Yeah. Great coaches win stuff on the margins. They pick up extra wins that might be losses. And they have the team the overall preparedness of the team is usually better than an average coach. And so, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I'm worried that this team is going to be missing is, you know, that Rick Carlisle knows how to actually coach and run a basketball team. And what we've seen so far with Jason Kidd in both Brooklyn and Milwaukee was there was a little bit of chaos there, you know?
Yeah. Let's move on and talk about.
Not that Dallas has been a walk in the park for everybody the last couple of years.
No, it has not, unfortunately.
Shout out to Tim.
Let's go to the awards section here. So we're going to do a bunch of, I think we've got like 8 or 9 different things here we're going to talk about. We're going to start with MVP because I feel like that's the thing that everyone wants to hear the most. Let's start at the top of the league. I think so in terms of like individual awards.
Yeah, I think that the MVP this year it's going to be a tricky one just because of, you know, where we're at as far as certain players' careers. You know, I don't think LeBron is likely to be pushing to win an MVP in the way that you really have to at this point because guys are competing for that.
There's that aspect of it, and I think that there's also the aspect, like, it did not go unnoticed to me that in the general manager survey that recently came out that Nikola Jokic was not only the, like, not voted to be a potential like best player in the league, like he was third among international players in voting
behind
for
Giannis
best player
and
best
Luka.
International player. Yeah. So I worry that there's going to be like a bit of a reaction to Jokic winning MVP that is totally unfair to Jokic, but will almost like certainly take him out of the running for MVP despite
you're
the fact
saying
that
there's
like
no chance at a back to back.
I think there are a lot of narrative factors that go in his favor toward something like an MVP, but you could see it last year. Like you could see that people like wanted to vote for LeBron and just like didn't last year. I worry that we see something like that happen, despite the fact that, like, Nikola Jokic is going to have to play without Jamal Murray and is going to have to, like, carry a defense, or at least, like, make a defense competent where he's playing next to Michael Porter. Like, we talk about Jokic not being good defensively. He's pretty okay, especially when it comes to, like, organizing the defense and, like, mm-hmm. communicating and things like that. He is kind of the key guy there. So, look, in my opinion, I think Nikola Jokic, like, would be somewhere in my top three. I just don't think people see it that way. And by the way, our good friends at BetMGM, sponsor of the Game Theory podcast, sportsbook partner of The Athletic, they have Nikola Jokic right now at eighth among MVP candidates. He's the same odds as, like, yeah, he's the same odds as Trae Young right now. It's 16-1. I just think that given the way this award is voted on, I think it's going to be hard for Kevin Durant, or for Nikola Jokic, I'm sorry, I looked at Kevin Durant on here, to build up that momentum that he did last year with his incredible play.
I'm with you there. I don't know if I totally agree that people didn't want to vote for him, but I do realize that there was that sentiment that they wished
yeah.
that he wasn't. Oh, if this guy hadn't gotten hurt, it would have been him. That's how it felt to me, at least. I don't know that they didn't necessarily want to vote for Jokic. Does that make sense? I think they just felt like maybe because I don't think most people want to take stuff away from guys when they do well. But I wonder if people were just so disappointed by how many guys were derailed during the season when things, like, when they were cooking, and even on his own team, right? Like, Jamal Murray goes down and, you know, Jokic has to take it up a notch. But I don't know if that'll affect him or not. I think Murray being out might give him, like you said, like, might give him a little bit of an edge, but Michael Porter is probably going to score like 26 or 27 points a game, man. Like, he's just going to have a crazy year. And Jokic, I don't think he's going to try to score as hard as he did last season. I think it could be, you know, look, he was definitely more aggressive, especially down the stretch last season. I wonder if Michael Porter Jr., having that healthy backcourt for the first time in a long time for them, if he doesn't try to facilitate even more and go back to what he was doing previously, where he was able to just hunt shots down the stretch. A lot of this is, you know, no Jamal Murray, right?
Right. Yeah, I would expect that we see a good amount early in the season of facilitating Jokic. I wonder if it turns into them needing him to score level.
Yeah,
like, Will Barton is there. Yeah, like, it helps to have Will Barton back. It helps, obviously, to have, like, a full season of that front court now with Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., Nikola Jokic. I just kind of think that he's going to need to score, because part of what makes Porter so valuable is his off-ball scoring, not necessarily his, like, on-ball creativity as a shot creator. I think we're going to see more of that, but I think I'm eliminating Jokic a little bit from this, not because he's not great. Like, I think Nikola Jokic is probably the second best offensive player in the NBA, behind the guy that I'm going to pick for MVP. But it just feels like the narrative forces are going to conspire against him in a way that frustrates me. My pick is Kevin Durant. I think Kevin Durant is the best player on planet Earth. I think that there are real narrative forces going in his favor with Kyrie Irving, you know, us being very unclear on what's going to happen with Kyrie is maybe the fair way to put it. And the way that he closed last year made me strongly feel that he is completely back, and that he might, like, want this award. Like, he might actually want to be the guy that, like, wins. I believe he only has one MVP right now, and it'd be kind of crazy to me if Kevin Durant ends his career with one MVP, right?
Yeah, that would be kind of wild if he did. But, I mean, I guess when you consider the era, I mean, it he's had some odd luck there, hadn't he? And then playing in Golden State, where, you know, you're playing with Steph Curry, people aren't going to give you as much credit as you probably deserve. See, KD was my pick last season. because I really thought it, like, hey, that guy's going to come back, and if he's healthy, right? That was the whole thing. Clearly, he was, and then you know had some injury issues, and that kind of, you know, the narrative kind of goes away when guys miss, you know, 15 games or whatever.
Yep.
I don't know, man. I think with the whole season of him and Harden, people aren't going to want to give him as much credit. I think this is just kind of where, and it sucks that it's going to be a narrative. It's always a narrative-driven award anyway. But right. In particular for Kevin Durant, I do think it's going. He's not going to be able to get it because of that. Now, also, would you be shocked if they're thinking mostly about the playoffs and maybe they're the second or third seed instead of the one seed? Like, would that totally shock you?
No, definitely wouldn't totally shock me. I guess that my question would be, other than Milwaukee, who would be the team that would jump them?
Right.
Just given the situation with Philadelphia now.
Absolutely, right. So I've got Atlanta as a team that could sneak into like the top two. Just because of all the depth that they got. You know, I mean, the team is just super deep. They might actually be a team that needs to make a consolidation trade just because they have so many guys right now. Like, you know, they got to start thinking a couple years ahead. But I digress. With Brooklyn, I could see them going either way. I could see it being, all right, you know what? We've got something to prove. And they're just going to go gangbusters. Or, hey, Kevin Durant's going to play 65 games this year. And we're thinking about April, May, and June, not, you know, this regular season. Because, I mean, let's face it, like, Kevin Durant is getting older. He's got, you know, had a serious injury. Like, I mean, these are considerations that we have to make, or at least that we have to consider. Man, the MVP is going to be tricky because I could see Giannis being back in the picture. I mean, you know, just won a finals and was finals MVP, and we've seen this happen on numerous occasions. I mean, think about the Warriors in the 73-9 season off the back of the title. It was almost like they arrived, they were here, and then they had all this extra confidence, and there's some kind of a boost that you get. I mean, I could see that with Giannis. My guy, and this is a tricky one because I don't actually think, like, I don't think this is likely to happen, but I know Utah is going to be a top three team in the West, potentially the number one seed. I mean, if Donovan Mitchell is at like 28, 29, 30 points a game, which we know he can do, couldn't Donovan Mitchell potentially sneak an MVP?
I think that he could at some point. I don't know if it'll happen this year.
This is the thing that I keep playing around with. It's like, because Paul George has an opportunity.
This year is weird.
Right? Yeah. So Paul George has a shot. And a lot of this is just, it really is considering the narratives, not necessarily who's the best player this season, right? Like, the best player, I thought Jokic was the best player last season. I thought that he's the guy who should have won the MVP.
Right? That I made totally sense agree to me, with that, right? Too.
Yeah. But like, Kevin Durant is the best player in the league, or it's Giannis or something like that. But last season, I thought Jokic, top to bottom, had the best season. I thought Giannis was actually right there with him. And if Giannis had won another MVP, it would have been fine with me. It was that close. And when you consider Giannis' defense and how important it is for what Milwaukee does, I would have been totally fine with it. But Giannis –
So
a little bit, you bring more up Giannis, though. But I think Giannis could win it again this year. It's a long way to get to. I think Giannis can win it again this year.
I think he can too, definitely. The thing that's kind of breaking my brain a little bit with Giannis winning would be – Giannis having three MVPs and Kevin Durant only having one. And Giannis is certainly on a trajectory to where he could very well have a more relevant career than Kevin Durant. He's not there yet. And I just am kind of looking at this. It's a bizarre thing to me. Like, I guess looking back at like the holistic way that the NBA evaluates players and their careers, it's going to be really hard for me to understand that Kevin Durant only won one MVP in an era when Giannis, you know, won three, or an era where Nikola Jokic also won an MVP. Like, Kevin Durant is one of the, like, I seriously think he's going to be one of the 15 best players to ever play basketball, if not higher.
Yeah.
And to only come away with one MVP award in large part, it would be because of the Golden State years. Like, his prime occurred in a situation where he was next to Stephen Curry. But, like, I'm just going to be real with you. I think Kevin Durant is a better basketball player than Stephen Curry. Like, full stop. In terms of his career value, I get that Golden State fans are probably like fucking turning off the podcast now, but man, it's tough for me to just kind of look at the holistic nature of Kevin Durant's career. And I guess that, like, look, MVP in the 2021-22 season isn't a career achievement award, but so much of the time it kind of is. Like, so much of the time we give these awards out like based off of more than just one season, right?
There's a couple of things there. It's kind of like Kobe, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit like Kobe.
Because Kobe also only won one as well.
Yeah, like, you could go back. I mean, Kevin Durant has had seasons that were good enough to win MVP, but this is where the narrative part of this, I think, comes in quite heavily, right? Like, his MVP season, that was a no-brainer, I thought. And he probably, you can make an argument for what? At least one more, maybe two. Right?
Yeah, I would say.
Who are you taking? Like, are you taking away one of Steph's? I don't think so. It's not as much. It's not just about Kevin Durant. It's about all the other guys too. Like, because Kevin Durant is, like you said, one of the 15 best basketball players to ever play in the NBA. Like, right now, today. And
I wonder,
he may only wind up with one MVP. It is wild.
Yeah, like, it's just kind of hard for me to wrap my head around that a little bit, I guess. Yeah. Like, but it does happen. I mean, look, like, you can't take away like Steph's 2016 year, right? Like, he's kind
of, he lost a season of his prime,
I don't think,
you know, to an injury, and very well could have won the MVP in that what wound up being the bubble year.
Yeah, that's a good point. No. The bubble year was the one that he missed, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying if he maybe hadn't missed it that season, right, coming out of the Golden State situation, like, he would have actually – and again, I hate that it's about a narrative thing. I also – and we've talked about this before. I think that these sorts of awards are great hooks to get us discussing the differences between great players. But I don't – like, it doesn't matter to me that Kevin Durant only has one MVP. You know, I think Kevin Durant – like, that guy's – like, what he has done speaks for itself.
Yeah, it does. I just worry that when we look back on it, because he chose to join the Warriors and because he created a super team in Brooklyn, that people are going to look back on it as he needed like more help than the other superstars of his era, when I don't think that's the case. I think that it would be a ridiculous narrative to say that. I think he was the guy who stirred the drink for Golden State in the playoffs when they won their two titles in 2017 and 2018, right? Like, he was freaking unbelievable, and his two finals MVPs showcase that, right? I hope that people don't look back on Kevin Durant and go, he like rode the coattails of other players and things like that.
Only 14 guys have even won more than one MVP, period. And now Kevin Durant needs to be on the list. I'm actually pushing for that. I'm not necessarily expecting it or anything, but I am going to be driving the narrative. If he's good this year, that's it. Kevin Durant, we got to get him another MVP.
See, like, that's the kind of thing that I think will happen, though.
I'm looking at this list. Like, Bob Pettit has two. Karl Malone has two. Get out of here.
Karl Malone won. Yeah. Yeah.
He should have won.
Well, yeah, the Malone MVP the one year is very hotly contested.
Listen, man, you're tired of voting for Jordan. Oh, I'm sorry.
Just some other odds here from BetMGM. Luka Doncic is the favorite at 4-1. Joel Embiid at 7-1. I think Embiid, if the 76ers are good, there's going to be a significant narrative push for him. And I don't even think it'll be narrative. I think it'll probably be rightful that he'll be right in the mix if he plays 65 or 70 games. Kevin Durant is the third favorite at 7-1, or tied for the second favorite, I guess, with Embiid at 7-1. Giannis is the fourth favorite at 8-1. Stephen Curry's 9-1. Damian Lillard, 11-1. LeBron, 14-1. Jokic is 16-1. Trae Young, 16-1. Devin Booker's 20-1. And by the way, Devin Booker's 20-1 and Chris Paul is 100-1. That is weird to me. I can't quite navigate why there's such an enormous difference in their odds. I kind of like Chris Paul as a market inefficiency there. Anthony Davis, James Harden, Jason Tatum, all 25-1. I think it's probably
Tatum
worth
is interesting too.
The
by
list
the way,
there, I think Tatum is kind of an interesting MVP choice. I wonder if this is the year we see him take that, like, Paul George, like, third place MVP spot that Paul George did when he was with Oklahoma City. Because Tatum, I think, is going to be awesome this year. I think he's going to be unbelievable.
I agree with that. And I think that if Boston can be better than we all expect, because, again, it's all about those expectations.
Yep.
If they can really be better than we expect, top four in the East level, we'll hear some Jason Tatum talk. I mean, this is just like with the Mavs. If the Mavs are top four, we're going to hear Luka. If you know, I think with the Nuggets, right? If they're in that top three conversation, we're going to hear Jokic. Yeah, I think winning is going to matter for the MVP award a great deal, as it maybe hasn't the last couple of seasons. Not just because I think that going back to a normal-ish schedule where it doesn't feel, there's no bubble, there's fans in the arena. I think that is going to have an impact, and I think that, at least I hope voters actually do look at winning, because that should matter too. The Nets have the best record, and Kevin Durant is at 30 points a game. I mean, that should be your
MVP,
right?
While Kyrie Irving is doing whatever Kyrie Irving is doing.
Yeah, so that, I mean, to me that's, I think that going away from that style of voting where it was like, one of the top two teams in the league as far as wins and losses go, and who's their best player, and then that's most likely your MVP. And it doesn't always work out that way, but I just think that's a pretty safe way to pick it.
Do you have a pick, Dave, before we move on?
Yeah, Giannis. I'm going to say Giannis.
Okay.
I think he's going to be incredible, man, and he's going to defend like crazy, and, he's Giannis, and he's in his prime, man. I mean, this is him for the next few years.
I'm glad you brought up defense. Let's take a quick commercial break, and we're going to have some fun with Defensive Player of the Year real quick. Okay, we are back. Let's dive into Defensive Player of the Year, where I think these odds are pretty interesting. So we've got Rudy Gobert, obviously the favorite, 7-2. Ben Simmons is sitting at 7-2 here. I just have no idea how anyone could feel confidence putting their money on Ben Simmons right now. Miles Turner, 13-2 is the third favorite. Joel Embiid, 10-1. Anthony Davis, 10-1. Giannis, 10-1. Bam Adebayo, 14-1. Draymond Green, 20-1. Matisse Thybulle, 20-1. Drew Holiday, 20-1. So I have a bit of an off-the-wall take among that group, and I would like to hear your take on Defensive Player of the Year first.
Wait, no. You can't tease an off-the-wall take and then say, here you go, Dave, give me your vanilla take. Come on, man.
So I think we're going to get a significant push for a guard to win it this year, because you could see that push coming last year, like late in the year. Drew Holiday and Drew Holiday's like representation started making like pretty substantial statements that guys like Drew Holiday, guys that are like wings, they can't win the Defensive Player of the Year award, and that's ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. So I kind of thought at some point that like Ben Simmons would be the happy medium among that group, right? Like, we give the Defensive Player of the Year award to Ben Simmons at some point because he fits the paradigm of where the league is going in terms of switchability. He's a really great perimeter defender as well. We'd be, kind of shifting the paradigm of the award at some point. I kind of wonder if it's Drew Holiday this year. Let me give the case for why people, I think, will very strongly consider Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday is coming off of an Olympics run where he genuinely like changed the pace of the Olympic team, like changed the entire narrative, it seemed like, of the Olympic team. Like, he was probably their second best player behind Kevin Durant at the Olympics. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
So we have this narrative push for a perimeter player to win the award that occurred late last year. And maybe that doesn't stand to this year. Maybe that doesn't like continue forward this year. I don't think that Drew Holiday is necessarily the most impactful defensive player, but again, these things are narrative driven, and Drew Holiday sitting there at 20-1 as the 10th favorite to win the Defensive Player of the Year award. I mean, I think that's pretty good odds. And honestly, like, I think that there is a real, really strong reason to choose Drew Holiday given the narrative forces at play. Also, he's the best perimeter defender in the NBA, like at the point of attack, just straight up. He's so disruptive. He's switchable on ones through threes. There's every reason to take Drew Holiday based off of skill, other than the fact that guys like Rudy Gobert and Joel Embiid and Miles Turner are just more impactful because they're centers and it's easier for them to impact a greater number of shots, in my opinion.
Okay. That's not that wild. I will say you're going to deal with the, well, you know, Giannis is playing back there. His job is easy. Like, is that stuff. How do you feel about the Golden State Warriors this year?
I'd like to know more about what Klay's timeline looks like.
You know what? You know what I'm high on for them? Their defense.
Their defense?
And I think Draymond Green has a really good chance here to win another Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, they were a top five defense last year, and they definitely should not have been. I mean, it just didn't make any sense. I think that they're gonna be in that top seven this year, and I think Draymond will have a really, really good chance, because if they can defend, and if some of this stuff from Jordan Poole is real, and if they can find a way to survive until Klay makes it, and let's say they're somehow like the sixth seed, you're going to point at Draymond Green. You're going to say, that doesn't happen without him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like that's it. A really good call. Mm-hmm. I like that, too.
Because
he
would
have been in my top three.
Yeah. You got, like, I'm just, you know, trying to think about, like you said, I don't think it's going to be Giannis, and I don't think it's going to be Rudy. Rudy's got three, and I think that's probably it. Because the playoff stuff, just, even though it's not accurate, it still sticks with people.
That and the fact that there is just real voter fatigue, as we kind of talked 100%. About earlier, with the Karl Malone, Michael Jordan thing, right?
Right.
Like, Rudy Gobert is unequivocally one of the absolute best defenders in the NBA. There's a very real case he's the most impactful player defensively in the NBA. I am not taking that away from him. I just really think that there will be voter fatigue this year.
I also think that we're changing our definition, though, right? So Rudy Gobert can be the most impactful night-to-night regular season defender, but he's not the most versatile. And you know, this whole conversation happened last year about him and Ben Simmons, and I thought that was a great talking point to describe the difference in the two, right? Like, Ben Simmons can win you any given possession. Rudy Gobert is going to win you most of them.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. Like, just that stability that you get from Gobert, it's boring, to be honest. And so the voter fatigue, I think, comes from that. But also, you know, it isn't as impressive as what Ben Simmons does. But I think that Draymond is
cool looking. Exactly. I think is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, and Draymond's, you know, a bit of a mix. And you know, people are going to watch the Warriors at least, you know, at least until Klay Thompson comes back. Because if Klay doesn't look great and they're going to miss the playoffs, then, you know, no chance for Draymond to win it. But I think Draymond will have a shot.
Yeah. No, I like that pick a lot. He would have definitely been in my top three. I would have said the guys that I look at. Look, Rudy Gobert is going to finish somewhere in the top three Defensive
forever.
Player of the Year. Like, no question.
Yeah.
It's just whether or not people will vote for him to win. I'm a little bit skeptical of whether or not people will vote for him to win, despite the fact that he is as unbelievable as he is defensively. I think there's going to be a push. Like, I think Dre is a great pick. I think there's going to be a push for a perimeter player like Drew Holiday. We're going to talk. I have a Paul George section coming up here once we get to some of the fun awards. The
Paul
Bam Adebayo one is interesting.
Defensive player of the year.
I don't think he's winning Defensive Player of the Year,
no,
but I am going to give him an award coming up here in a minute. Okay, let's just kind of buzz through these next two. Sixth man of the year. Honestly, like, I think we just don't know what starting lineups
are. Yeah, I have no idea.
To an extent.
Yeah, I think, Jordan Clarkson has just as good a shot of winning it again. I mean, yeah. You know, we know it winds up mostly being about points. You know, who's going to score a lot coming off the bench? That's basically it. Yeah. Tyler Hero might have a shot at this if he comes off the bench all season, because I do think he's going to score a lot for them. And I think that they're going to be decent and going to be they're going to have a lot of attention on them. So Tyler Hero would be my pick for sixth man of the year, just because I don't want to just say Jordan Clarkson because he won it last year.
I'm extremely bummed after seeing the Lakers preseason games that BetMGM does not have Malik Monk listed as a potential sixth man of the year. They do have my pick at number two, though. I went with Kevin Huerter. It seems like he's going to come off the bench, especially early in the season. So I think what Kevin Huerter showed defensively last year, he's also going to score points, like maybe not quite as many as Jordan Clarkson, but I think he's just a more well-rounded player than Jordan Clarkson. So I went with Huerter. I think Clarkson's a great potential pick. We're going to talk about Patty Mills in a little bit here. Like, I think that there are a lot of really interesting picks there, but I would go with Huerter personally. But this award, we don't have enough information, maybe, is the better way to put it. And then rookie of the year. You don't watch a ton of rookies coming in, do you?
I try. So I used to prep for the draft, as hard as anybody. But the truth of the matter is I just felt like I was throwing out a lot of work. Right. It was extra work. I didn't really need it for what I do. So now what I've tried to do is, I obviously follow the draft work and get a little bit done ahead of time, but I've allowed myself to not have preconceived notions about these guys. And so I start watching them once they hit summer league. So I've been watching guys, I've seen a little bit of stuff from preseason, very little, but I've seen quite a bit of summer league stuff. So I'm not up on rookies until, maybe December, January, when I start to get a feel for what they actually are in the NBA. It's easier for me that way.
Yeah. Look, I think that I'll read off the odds maybe just to give people a bit of an understanding of where we're at. Cade Cunningham is 5-2, Jalen Green 3-1, Jalen Suggs 15-2, Evan Mobley 8-1, Scotty Barnes 8-1, Alperen Şengün 14-1, Davion Mitchell 18-1. I picked Cade Cunningham because I think he's the best rookie this year. I think Jalen Green's going to score the most points.
I think Jalen Green's any got a rookie chance to this win. Year. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind. The odds are basically the same. Yeah, the opportunity is going to be so real.
I think Cade Cunningham with an older coach, like with Dwayne Cade, I think that actually is a hindrance for this in this instance. I think it's going to be a help for a lot of other stuff with Cade Cunningham. But I think in particular, scoring load won't be the same. He's not going to have the same green light. Not in the same way, at least. I'm sure he's going to have a green light, but it's not going to be like the one in Houston for everybody. So I just think that the scoring is going to be the differentiator here. Unless he's somehow able to put up like 8-9 assists a game, which with that roster, I don't know where they're going to come from. Kelly Olynyk might light it up, but
I also worry, do they just give him the ball or do they try and make this Killian Hayes thing happen?
Well, if summer league was any indication, we're going to see a lot of left-handed dribbling, left-handed dribbling.
We're going to see some memes on the internet at some point about Killian Hayes. Like, stop trying to make fetch happen, like in Mean Girls. Stop trying to make Killian Hayes happen when you have Cade Cunningham right there.
Yep.
I think Jalen Green is a good person to bet on. I'm firmly on team Cade Cunningham. Like, I think Cade Cunningham's gonna be like a league average defender as a rookie, which is like almost impossible. Like, he's that good.
He's got great instincts, man. I was really impressed. I actually was impressed by his just natural leadership, making eye contact with the guys on the court. Like, some of the little the more subtle stuff that I saw from him in summer league, I'm very, very impressed by. I this guy is not the player he's gonna be in 2 years, so I don't even like I don't know what the coaching staff is even going to allow him to do. Whereas in Houston, it sort of feels like they're just going to roll the ball out a little bit. And I mean, I think that kind of gives you know, Jalen a little bit of an edge as far as this award goes. But, you know, I'm with you, man. From everyone I've talked to, scouts, coaches in the league, folks like you who cover the draft and also talk to me, you talk to more people than I do about the draft. Everyone thinks that this guy, like you said, is going to be able to defend at an average level as a rookie, and they believe in the shot. So, I mean, I don't know. I think he should win the award, right? Like, he's the best player in the group. It's just about that opportunity.
I want to name one, like, way off the radar guy who has looked fucking amazing in preseason, and it's Trey Murphy in New Orleans. He was, I thought, one of the absolute best rookies at Summer League. He is making threes like nobody's business so far in the preseason. He's sitting at 66-1 on our good friends over at BetMGM. Look, you've like $10 to spare. I think there are worse bets to make than Trey Murphy right now. I think Trey looks like he's going to play a significant role on the New Orleans Pelicans. Like, if I was the Pelicans, I'd probably be starting him and Nikhil Alexander-Walker next to Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson and Jonas.
I love Nikhil Alexander-Walker. He's high up on my list of guys who could get a little bit more attention this season.
Okay, let's take one more quick commercial break, and then we'll get into some of the more fun awards that I wanted to do. Okay, now we're going to get into the good stuff. Breakout player, which is like a knockoff of most improved player, but I just hate what the most improved player has become. It's basically like the best, like, you know, second year guy who, like, his numbers jump or whatever. I don't know that this guy's numbers. Yeah, like, I don't know if this guy's numbers are going to jump, but I think that by the end of the year, we're going to talk about this guy as being like one of the absolute best young point guards in the NBA in a way that he is not discussed right now. I picked Darius Garland for this.
You must believe in that passing.
I do believe in the passing to quite a high level, and I believe in the shooting as well at a pretty high level.
Can he do it next to Colin Sexton?
No, I think that they need to do something with Colin at some point. But put it this way, like, by the end of the year, I think that they know already, based off of like some of the reporting that seems to be out there, that Darius is their guy, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that more than anything, it's going to become very clear that the two guys they need to build around. And again, I think this is stuff they know. Like, I think Chris Fedor actually reported this, that they feel this way. The two guys they need to build around are Darius Garland and Evan Mobley as your point guard center, like, pivots. I think Darius Garland is an absolute stud. I think he's going to average like 22 and like 8 assists this year. Wow. If he gets the opportunity, if they move Colin Sexton, if they just frankly like split those guys' time more, I think he's going to have an absolutely monster season numerically.
So I was going to say Michael Porter Jr., which is like my pick, like if I'm just trying to guess who might win the award, right? That not who I think should win the award necessarily, because Michael Porter Jr. is going to score a lot of points and he's going to play a lot more and have more attention. Nikhil Alexander-Walker is a guy who should be on the list. OG Anunoby, who I thought was going to do it last year, and he did. He was good last year. I think he's got a real chance to establish himself. Like, would it strike you as completely out of left field if OG is the 1B this year to Pascal?
No, not at all.
Okay.
He started to show like some of that ball handling ability. Yes. They started to use him a little bit more in pick and roll. Wouldn't totally blow my mind. And by the way, Pascal's going to miss the first 20-ish, let's say 15-ish games of the season.
Yeah.
So he's going to get to really work that well with Fred VanVleet early, mm-hmm. and they're really running, which I think helps him. Just taking from preseason, it seems like they're going to like sprint the floor as much as they can. Yeah, I don't mind that at all. I will say, just looking at BetMGM here, like there are some real there's a way for you to do some damage if you have a strong feel on this award, because like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is 7-1, Zion is 7-1, Michael Porter Jr. is 7.5-1, Kevin Porter Jr. is 9-1, Zach LaVine's 12-1, Colin Sexton's 12-1. Like a lot of these guys have already broken out, the guys who are right. the favorites for this award. So if you can, you know, kind of mine the middle tier, the guys, you know, like Jordan Poole is at 40-1. You know, I'm trying to think here. Tyler Hero is 66-1. Matisse Thybulle's 80-1. Like there are a lot of guys here where you can potentially make a killing if you feel real strongly about them one way or another. Put it that way. Okay. Let's go to most important player that nobody is talking about. I will let you take the floor on this one, Dave.
Tobias Harris.
Love that pick.
Just completely forgotten. And, you know, that dude was awesome last year. Guess what? He's going to have more pick and roll opportunities. Guess what he's awesome at? Being in the pick and roll. Listen, Tobias Harris is a really good player. And, okay, the contract stuff gets to be funky in, you know, in the zeitgeist generally. But that's a dude that just is forgotten about a lot in a way that Chris Middleton kind of was previously. And I wonder if they can find, you know, when they eventually do make the Simmons trade, is Tobias Harris a guy who, with an increased workload, might be sneaking into some of these lists at the end of the season? Might be a most improved guy, even though he's on a max deal. You know what I mean? Like, might be in those conversations that people are having. Like, you know, this guy got so much better or produced so much more under the increased workload, and it was a positive for them. I think Tobias Harris is a guy who could be absolutely pivotal to this team if they want to remain in that top half of the East, which I think they could, depending on this trade. I mean, this is a team that if they run it back, I like them quite a bit. I think they're in the mix, in that top three mix. But Tobias Harris is the guy that comes to mind for me. How do you feel about him?
Yeah, I like that pick a lot. I think he goes really underrated. I think another thing that goes in his favor is certainly playing for Doc Rivers, who he's continued to have an immense amount of success with over the course of the years, starting in Los Angeles and then even last year in Philadelphia. I'm sorry. God, my brain just like totally broke there for a second. It's a very interesting pick because you're right. Like, he could end up getting a lot more on-ball opportunity. Like, have you watched any of the – I watched, like, a little bit of the 76ers preseason. It's – I don't want to say it's, like, dire, but it's not pretty in terms of them trying to create offense in any way, shape, or form. Like, dribbling is hard for them at times right now. I would like to see them run a little bit more with Tobias. Like, I think that he has that in him. I just really wish that the thing that frustrated me most about him last year was he really hesitated pulling the trigger from three. Like, he would get open three-pointers generated for him, and he would pump fake and get into the mid-range, or he'd hesitate, and by the time that hesitation stopped, he would... I guess like almost like just be closed out on already. So he couldn't go and take that shot. Like, I would just like to see him fucking pull the trigger. He was almost a 50-40-90 guy last year. Tobias Harris can really shoot the shit out of the ball. Just fucking fire Tobias. Like, please. That's all I'm asking. Just fucking shoot the ball when you're open.
Yes. Yeah. So, who's your guy?
I went with Paul George. I feel like everyone is kind of not, is just like not talking about the Clippers right now because They don't have Kawhi Leonard.
I keep bringing up Paul George as a guy who I think, you know, if the Clippers are in the top four somehow, that's a sneaky MVP candidate guy.
But it feels like nobody's talking, like anyone that I've really seen, like nobody's talking about the Clippers, just other than you, because don't have Kawhi. So nobody thinks they're contenders now.
And this is that's the thing, right? It's they don't see them as finals contenders, and it just completely ignores the entire regular season, which, you know, they're still going to be pretty good. They're not going to win the title, not without Kawhi, although the reporting is that Kawhi looks amazing in his rehab, which... if Kawhi came back in April and was awesome, would that shock you? Nah, not me. I guess I've seen crazier stuff out of that dude. But I'm with you. I think Paul George has a good chance that if the Clippers outperform our expectations, it's going to be because of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely going to be because of him. He has turned into one of the absolute best three-point generators in the NBA because he's 6'9" and can shoot over the top of anyone and has incredible shiftiness with the ball in his hands. I think people just didn't really recognize how good he got in the games he played last year. Like, late in the year, he was pretty fucking close to the guy he was in Oklahoma City when he finished third in MVP. He wasn't quite there yet, but I would bet you Paul George is right around 27, 28 points a game again this year. The same level he was at during that incredible 2019 Oklahoma City year where he was genuinely one of the five best players in the NBA that season. It was absolutely incredible what he was able to do, especially on both ends of the court, not just the offensive end. I would not count out the Clippers by any stretch of the imagination, almost purely because Paul George is there and because they play a pretty modern brand of basketball. Like, they have a ton of really good wings that are going to make it hard to play against this year. Like, they have pretty good rim protection because Ivica Zubac still exists and is still very good. Eric Bledsoe coming in, like, maybe we get a rebound Eric Bledsoe year. If we do that, like, if we get a rebound Eric Bledsoe year, this situation becomes very interesting in a hurry, I think, for them, because they could actually be really, really good. Reggie Jackson obviously returning is huge. If we get playoff Reggie Jackson, that would be great. Like, I'm fairly in on the Clippers this year, the more I think about it, just in comparison to where everyone else is on the Clippers, maybe is the way to put it.
I think they're kind of middle of the pack in the West. Just, again, no Kawhi. But if they get out of that, I do think it'll be Paul George driven.
Yeah. Okay. Most likely guy to be traded. Dave?
Are we not saying Ben Simmons for all of these?
Look, I mean, I figured that you would pick Ben, so, like, let's just talk about Ben quick.
What about Joe Ingles?
Ingles is interesting. I hope he doesn't get traded. He's just, like, so synonymous with Utah. By the way, like, I want to couch this in, like, we aren't reporting this.
No.
We are not reporting this. This is our speculation.
You don't have to do that when I'm on the show.
Based off of team situation.
Yeah, you don't be surprised how often everybody knows I'm not reporting anything. Purposely not reporting anything here. But I did hear Joe Ingles is going to be I think Ingles is a sneaky guy that could get moved. I thought he was a guy that the Warriors should have gone after in the offseason. I'm not exactly, you know, I'm not a trade machine guy. I don't like to be on the internet, but, you know, I didn't go and look for any specifics, but I thought that was a guy that would fit with what they do. You know, he can run some pick and roll and big enough body and can even play some four, which I think is at this point, like during the regular season, he probably should be doing more of that. So with the expiring deal, I think that if you're Utah, you have to start thinking ahead at some point. Do you want to bring him back? You know, what's that going to look like? I'm sure they're having conversations now, but you can't lose him for nothing. He's too important to the team. I mean, you know. So I think that he could be a guy that's potentially moved. Ben Simmons is going to get traded.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit more of a boring conversation, but it wouldn't be completely out of left field if Ingles got moved.
Yeah, so If you're Utah, do you move him or Boyan?
I think Ingles as an expiring is just going to be a little bit easier to move. I mean, Oklahoma City might just, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure what they're able to get. I mean, we know what Utah needs, and wing defenders just don't grow on trees, and they definitely don't get traded for 34-year-old, hybrid forwards. As great of a shooter.
So much,
so do I. I love his game. Great shooter. But he's going to be your fifth best starter. You know, maybe your fourth best starter if you're not that good. But you're just not going to get a 3-and-D wing guy for Joe Ingles at this point that's going to be a difference maker. I think you'd almost be better off just, all right, we're going to keep Joe Ingles and do this thing. But the Rudy Gay addition there is going to be interesting to watch the first half of the season, because that should inform the Ingles decision, I think.
See, to me, the Rudy Gay thing informs Boyan more than Joe, because Joe does a lot more like offensive initiation, whereas like I think Rudy is almost like a like for like. He's not quite as good as Boyan, but it's a like for like replacement for Boyan in a lot of ways.
See, I actually think Boyan should be doing a little bit more initiation. I mean, if you think about when he finally got going last year, like when Donovan Mitchell was out, he was actually starting a lot of the offense. So, I mean, and, you know, I'm with you. I think Joe Ingles, yeah, certainly he does a lot of that, but they shouldn't want him to. They actually should want him to do less, because he was worn out by the end of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point. My pick here was Goran Dragic. We talked about Dragic at the top.
Is that a trade or a buyout, though?
Could be buyout, but I think that the Raptors are keeping him because they think that he can be traded, right? Like, sure. I think that they're making that calculation that it's a doable thing for them. I mean, it's not like breaking news that Dallas like theoretically would have interest if he came available, right? I don't know how they would get that done in a trade necessarily. Like, it'd have to be Dwight Powell and something else, if I remember correctly. I've like worked out the math on it. I can't remember exactly what it is. Which, by the way, like, to me, that deal makes some sense for Toronto to get some depth at center, bring a Canadian player home that I think their fan base would really connect with, but I don't know if they actually have interest in that necessarily either.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there.
Yeah, Goran Dragic is like good sixth man though at this point, and I think again could swing like a playoff series if he was to go out and be acquired. This is a slightly different category. Most interesting preseason trade target. So not necessarily the guy that we think will be moved at some point, but just the guy that we think is very fascinating and could genuinely like swing a playoff race or like swing a team's fortunes by being moved.
This is in the preseason, like right now that you're
right
saying.
Right now. Yeah.
I mean, is anyone... I'm not expecting any trades right now. Is there a rookie extension that I'm not thinking of?
Oh, I see
of?
What you're saying.
Yeah, is there a rookie extension that I'm not thinking of?
I mean, throughout the course of the season, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, like as far as a swing guy goes, I will say this. I think it's actually pretty rare that any player traded during the season that's a non-superstar is really a swing piece.
Yeah.
Am I way off here?
Yeah, I mean, like, it depends on, like, what we would consider, right? Like, Jared Allen last year was an interesting one because Jared Allen didn't sign a rookie extension and then got moved afterward. And it seemed like the writing had been on the wall since Jacques Vaughn decided to start DeAndre Jordan over him the season prior. This year, my pick for this is actually kind of an entire team. It is... whatever the Indiana Pacers do, because the Pacers have a fascinating just roster of talent, and I am very intrigued to see what they decide to do with it. Like, Malcolm Brogdon has this year and next year left on his deal, but I believe next year is a player option, if I remember correctly. I might be wrong about that. They have Miles Turner, who has 2 years left. They have Caris LeVert, who has 2 years left. They have expirings for TJ Warren and Jeremy Lamb. They have 2 years left on Justin Holliday. They have a new coach that's going to run something totally different than what Nate Bjorkgren was running and then what Nate McMillan was running the year before that. I have a feeling that this early portion of the season is going to be to kind of see what players work best within the Rick Carlisle scheme, what players could theoretically be moved, and then they're going to make a decision from there and maybe make a move.
Sure. I mean, look, Miles Turner is a good player that would fit a lot of teams, man. A lot of teams. So I'm with you there. Brogdon is really interesting.
Yeah. They have a lot of interesting guys.
I don't get the Simmons to Philly, to Indiana thing. They're one of the teams that keeps coming up that makes no sense as a one-to-one. I mean, but man, if somehow Philly could get their hands on Malcolm Brogdon, sign me up.
So if you're Philadelphia, do you even the problem is they don't really have any do you do Brogdon, Chris Duarte, and a lot of picks? Is that kind of the idea?
I mean,
TJ Warren in there?
Was Indiana going to play Sabonis, Simmons, and Miles Turner? No.
Yeah, that seems bad to me. You have to move one of those two guys to a third team.
You got
to
rope in the Warriors. In a deal
like that.
And get some of their young guys and send Miles Turner there. I don't know. But I'm bad at fake trades. I'm really bad at fake trades. I'm awful.
Yeah.
At fake trades.
Yeah. I don't know what such a deal would look like, which tends to make me think that it's probably not going to happen. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a, they to me are the team where I look at them and I'm like, oh, they have a lot of really interesting pieces that a lot of other teams would love to have. So that makes me think that something could be happening at some point once Rick Carlisle gets comfortable with the roster and figures out exactly what he wants to do with it.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay. Final category here among the individual players. Most underrated or under the radar offseason move that could swing the title race. I sprung this on you a minute before the podcast started. You've had an hour to think about it.
Oh yeah.
What's your name here? Because there's
Hill.
One name that. Ooh, I like that.
George
one.
Hill.
Okay.
Because it means no Bryn Forbes minutes for the Bucks.
Yeah.
Now his shooting was great, but man, it was an adventure. On defense, I think George Hill gives you plenty of shooting, gives you a little bit of ball handling, and can hold up on the defensive end. So I think that was a big addition for the Bucks. Helps their bench a lot, man, a lot. That was a weak point for them. You know, when DiVincenzo went down, I just think they didn't have another guy to be able to step up. I think George Hill is a good guy to be that guy.
I think that the Bucks are going to be a much better regular season team. Robbie Callender and I talked about that on the Eastern Conference over-unders. Mm-hmm. Just looking at who they went out and got, they're going to get a full year out of Bobby Portis and Brooke Lopez again. They have George Hill. They have Dante DiVincenzo coming back from injury. They are probably going to get more minutes from Jordan Wara. They brought in Shimi Ogilvie to steal some of those tougher defensive minutes that Giannis has to play. Hopefully, if you need to have a bigger body who's a big forward in there, Shimi can take 10 of those minutes maybe. They just have enough guys now to be able to eat up minutes, and that doesn't even include Grayson Allen, right? Or maybe you get the wild card that is Rodney Hood to be able to play 15 minutes a night and be good again.
Well, Rodney Hood was another guy that I was thinking about, but my expectations are pretty low there. If he gives you anything, it's great,
yeah.
But yeah, you're not going to get much.
Yeah, no, totally agree. But this team's just deeper than what it was last year, and I think that's really going to help them in the regular season, and I think that's important, particularly given the fact that both Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday are coming off of very, very long seasons, including the finals and the Olympics. So getting them as much time to rest as they can, playing them a few fewer minutes per game, I think would really help them in the long run. The guy that I picked here is Patty Mills, and it's for obvious reasons that we have no idea what's going to happen with Kyrie Irving. Again, we should just continue to say that. We have no idea what's going to happen with Kyrie Irving. Patty Mills, though, has proven that he can be a really valuable piece on a winning team, both in the Olympics and with San Antonio over the years. He just continues to get better, it feels like, with age. He is so creative with the ball in his hands. He's such a ridiculous pull-up shooter. He is definitely not like a like-for-like replace. He's a like-for-like replacement with Kyrie. He's nowhere near the level that Kyrie brings. But I do think that he'll be able to eat up a significant amount of minutes that if Kyrie does not play in some home games, having Patty Mills around is going to be increasingly important for the Brooklyn Nets going forward.
And he also can run your bench. You know, I mean, he's a real professional basketball player in every sense of that word. I love that signing. I love Patty Mills. I think he is one of the best bench players of his era. You know, when you just think about the importance of his role and his ability to close games, even having a guy who's going to be able to move the basketball the way he does, space the floor, quick, willing shooter, it's going to be good for them. And I can see him getting some starts here and there, like you mentioned with Kyrie and his status being up in the air. I love that signing too.
Okay. Final few questions here. What team wins the Eastern Conference in terms of regular season?
I mean, I'll go the boring route and say Brooklyn.
Yep. I agree. I think it's also still going to be Brooklyn.
Yeah, they
too much offensive creation. They have enough depth. Like, I think that they're going to win the East.
Yeah.
Western Conference regular season champion.
This one's a little trickier to me. I can see Utah doing it again. A lot of it with the Lakers is going to, you know, is their foot going to be on the gas? Will it have to be on the gas the whole time? Like, if they can lock up a top three seed and feel like pretty comfortable, you know, are they going to keep pushing? Is LeBron going to play, you know, 75 games? I don't know, man. I think that all of my questions have so little to do with level of talent and so much to do with strategy.
Yeah.
Which is one of the frustrating things, actually, about covering the NBA. It's, hey, is that team going to try in 82 games? Probably not. Well, now I got to guess. Yeah, I mean, it's true, right? Like, every year, like, even like with the narrative stuff where we're sitting here talking, well, it's, you know, are they going to rest them too much? I don't know. So I think that I could see Utah, depending on how experimental they get, because I think that this could be they could be the Bucks of this season, where they have gotten so much success with one thing and they know they need to mix it up, that they might take a little bit of a step back during the regular season to step up in the playoffs, if that, you know, like Milwaukee did last year. So they might do that. Phoenix could very well be the number one seed, but I'm going into this thinking that the Lakers are going to go bell to bell and try to get the one seed and, you know, try to win another title.
The thing that Robbie and I talked about on the Western Conference Over-Unders podcast was just how much having Russell Westbrook makes your floor raised.
Oh, yeah.
In the regular season. Like, he just plays so hard every single night. You're going to have creation out there every single night that he plays. You're going to have great transition driving play every single night that he plays. He is just going to help them win more regular season games. I think they would be my pick, and it would be closely followed by Utah, just because they're so well oiled in terms of what they do from a schematic perspective. I will say also, like, you know, I picked Kevin Durant to win MVP. LeBron is sitting at 14-1 right now to win MVP. If the Lakers win the West, there's going to be a push for LeBron.
Oh, and there's going to be a huge narrative there too, right? And see, that's the thing. And I don't even say that as a negative, by the way. I think the narrative part of the MVP is actually important, because MVP tells the story of the season without a stat book. You know, you don't have to. I don't have to watch all of these games. I can just say, oh, Jokic was the MVP. Wow. You know what I mean? And then you have the conversation about how that happened. So as I don't necessarily think me in the sport, like in sports media, should be pushing narratives necessarily, because that's weird. But certainly they're going to play a part. And I think I'm right there with you. If LeBron is doing what he started the season last year doing, he's going to get votes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think LeBron is, like, somehow, for the first time in his career, might actually be like an underrated look at MVP. like very seriously.
It would be cool as hell, man. I think a lot of people have the wrong idea about me. I like crazy fun. So this Lakers team that feels kind of crazy because it's all these old guys or whatever, man, I hope that they are awesome. I hope it is basketball nirvana, because that would be just fun. It would be fun to talk about for a year. So I
think it's going
to
be really good.
I think they're going to be really good too. I really do think they're going to be really good. We're going to make fun of them when old stuff happens, you know, when the old guy situations arise, which is going to, you know, when one of them has bursitis or something.
Here's the thing. They have so many of them, though. Like, they have so many of these older guys that they're just going to be able to make it work, I think.
They have a never-ending supply of dudes that at least know how to just go out and be a professional basketball player. And that, ask Orlando what that's like. They don't know. Ask the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we are going to tease. That's fun. It's fun teasing. But I swear, man, when you look at what they did and you look at what the Pelicans did, I think the Lakers did better.
Yeah.
They're at least, I don't know, man. I'm pumped about the Lakers. I'm really pumped about the Lakers. And if LeBron is at an MVP level, yeah, that's something else. That's special. That'd be a special season.
It's going to be amazing. It's going to be absolutely amazing. Okay, Titleist, who is going to win the NBA championship in 2022? Dave Dufour.
How about Milwaukee Bucks back-to-back? Screw it.
Love it.
That's what I'm picking on your show. I'm going to pick something else on. No, I'm
do it. Yeah, pick. Just run the gamut, and then
be like whenever clips. I'm going to save the clips.
Whenever it happens, just go for it. Just throw it out there.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. So Milwaukee Bucks. I do think that the Bucks have a good chance. And obviously, so much of Brooklyn is just about them having everybody there.
Yeah.
But even without Kyrie, I still think that there's a good chance that they can win it. My three teams, I think it's Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and the Lakers. That's my three favorites right now. I mean, that could change. I mean, you know, we could be sitting here beginning of January and, you know, maybe Luka's made another leap and maybe Kristaps is healthy and all of a sudden it's like, whoa, Dallas is doing. You know, I think that this is one of those years that we've rarely had in the NBA where it is just so fucking wide open. It's awesome. And even with a juggernaut in Brooklyn, it's still pretty wide open. Kind of cool.
The Nets, Lakers, and Bucks are the three favorites, according to BetMGM, to win the NBA title.
Basic.
Golden State is fourth right now because I am assuming that BetMGM has a significant liability from Warriors fans that they have to account for.
See, I don't gamble, so that part of gambling just it never occurs to me that that bad gamblers influence lines because you know it's how it works, so yeah, I always forget.
And
that
fans like fans just like toss you know
sure
$1,000 on the Warriors to win because like the Warriors a lot of Warriors fans are also pretty wealthy and can afford to like put a lot of money down on the Warriors, so it wouldn't surprise me.
What's
if they're
the
like
action
a pretty
on the Warriors
substantial
just
amount
missing the playoffs completely is can you bet on that?
That's a good question. Let's see here.
I would like those numbers better, I'm assuming.
You can get like basically 1.5 to 1 for them to be in the play-in tournament. I don't know if I have misses the playoffs here from BetMGM.
All I'm saying is I'm expecting a leap from Anthony Edwards and for Karl Anthony Towns to be able to put a little bit more together. And actually stay healthy with a real coach up there. And I'm not ready to call it yet, but I think the Timberwolves could sneak into that play-in spot that everyone is kind of penciling in Golden State for.
I'm Mr. Positive on the Timberwolves. I picked their over in the Over-Unders podcast with Robbie. Robbie got a lot of shit for picking the under from Timberwolves fans. I am. I don't even know if I'm firmly in on it, but I am. I am in on a good Timberwolves team. I would like to see a good Timberwolves team. Maybe is the best way to put it.
Here, I'll let you in because it's just me and you. I'll let you in on another strategy that I use is always pick overs.
See, that's
because I'm not keeping track.
For the purposes of
talking on a podcast, like, you know, my thing is this, right? Well, I have a natural tendency to lean toward the positive stuff, right? When I'm talking about a team.
Yeah, I do too.
Right? It's more fun for me. I got into this because I'm a basketball coach, and that's how our brains work typically. At least, you know, I hope it's typical. And so, you know, I literally would just pick the over. And then I'd argue, you know, where the over was coming from. It's more fun that way to me as an exercise. People shouldn't get mad, though.
No one can be mad for optimism.
No. Can't get – well, I actually think even – like Robbie picking an under. No, you got to gloat when they go over. Don't get mad. Bring it up later.
Dave, this has been fun. Please tell the people where they can find your work.
At The Athletic, exclusively at The Athletic. The Athletic app, by the way, is fantastic, man. Like, we just – I mean, you know, Sam. We've now, like, we're adding all these features and podcasts right there on the front page, so you can get to the pods very easily if you're a subscriber. So go to The Athletic for everything Dave Dufour related with the NBA.
Love it. Yeah, go follow Dave. He is a very, very fun follow over at The Athletic, over on Twitter at Dave Dufour NBA. This has been Sam Vecini. Dave, have you watched any movies recently? I feel like we ask everyone that comes on.
Oh, you know, what did I watch? Oh, I went and saw Venom.
Oh, man, I'm so jealous. How good was it?
Here's what I'll tell you. The first Venom is one of the most awful movies I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it was terrible. It was so bad. And I wasn't going to go see this, but the reviews started to come out. And I'm not a review guy. I'm not into spoilers. I don't really follow stuff generally. But I also don't follow movies. So I don't even know. Like, I didn't know Andy Serkis directed this movie until I happened to – there was a featurette or something. Like, I just don't care, right? Like, I just want to see the movie. That goes for all movies and TV shows. Basically everything. Just show me this stuff. And so the reviews came out, and I happened to see one on Twitter, and the guy was like, look, it's silly. And I was like, man, I have nothing to do this afternoon. I'm going to go see this silly movie that's like an hour and 30 minutes long, which, another bonus, just get me in and get me out. It was fun, man. It felt like a 90s action movie, like a buddy action movie is what it felt like. And it was really, really fun. It was silly. I found myself giggling quite a bit, and yeah. I thought it was a fun movie.
I'm sold just based off of that review. Yeah. I enjoyed the first Venom a little bit just because it was so dumb and so silly and so ridiculous. I am one of the – I think that movie made like $800 million somehow, the first Venom. That's how we end up with a second Venom movie. I had a great time at the first Venom, and I'm looking forward to seeing the second Venom whenever movie theaters open up here in Australia again, which
I mean, you might be streaming awaiting. It. You might be streaming it at this point.
God.
I mean, I don't know. We can get into that on another thing. But other than that, oh, man, I saw the Suicide Squad, the new Suicide Squad, which was fun. But everything is a superhero movie. And I will admit, look, I grew up reading comic books. Like, I was a nerd. Well, I'm not even going to say that because I was a nerd. But I read a lot of comic books. And this is almost like it's 10-year-old me. This would be a dream come true if I had said, man, they're going to have all these great superhero movies. But, man, I wish there were some movies that weren't just superhero movies.
Yeah, you really got to search for them now.
Jason like Statham wife has a new movie that I need to watch. Because at least it's not a superhero movie.
Are you talking about Wrath of Man?
Maybe. Did that just come out?
Yeah.
Okay.
It came out in like February. I saw it. It was fine.
James Bond is out. I'm going to go see James Bond. Look, I love Bond movies. I mean, we could have done a podcast on Daniel Craig as the best and worst Bond.
Dave, I'm not joking. I am legitimately in on that podcast. I'm rewatching the Bond movies right now. I think what I've realized is that the Bond franchise with Daniel Craig might be my favorite piece of IP out there right now. Like, I love those movies so much. Like, yeah. I just rewatched Casino Royale maybe 3 days ago.
Great movie.
Something like that.
Coming in with even the start of it, like in black and white, like they just set the whole tone for what the series was going to be. And I'm not a big like talk about movie guys, but I those movies in particular, I think that they did such a nice job of marrying Bond movies with what the genre turned into.
Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic.
Like, the plot of Casino Royale is like borderline incomprehensible. Like, it is so like, there's so much stuff going on, and that, like, you have to be paying attention to every single thing to understand exactly why is Daniel Craig like going to play poker, like he's in the Bahamas. Why is he doing this? Why is he doing that? Like, honestly, I don't even know that it holds together completely, but like you said, like with that scene in black and white in Casino Royale to start the Daniel Craig era, that movie is just so fucking cool. Like, that's just like what it comes down to.
Yeah.
It's so fucking cool. Like, it's sleek. Daniel Craig is just really awesome as Bond. He marries like ruggedness that they wanted with, oh my God. Like, it's a perfect movie almost. Now
you can argue that he's not a good Bond, right? So there is that argument. Like, Timothy Dalton, I don't think, you know, if the standard for Bond is Sean Connery, then I think that it's much more of that Pierce Brosnan, Remington Steele act than it is the Daniel Craig physical brute force. You know what I mean? But I enjoyed these movies a lot, and I'm going to go see Bond. Maybe not tonight, but maybe tomorrow.
I am so jealous that I can't go and see that movie. Like, it is the like disappointment of lockdown for me, that lockdown is not over before No Time to Die came out. Yeah, I desperately need to see it.
Lockdown wasn't over before No Time to Die was supposed to come out originally. That's
how much I
hate it.
Oh my God!
I'm rooting for you guys in Australia.
We need it. We really need it. Dave, thanks for coming on. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. We'll be back next week with more from Matt Penny, with more NBA stuff. We'll see. I don't even know what I'll write about yet, what I'll podcast about. But we're going to have fun. Until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.